Okay. Now, I don't normally do this, but I hit record before I let Sarah into the waiting room just because I think there's a chance that this reaction might be worth capturing. So we'll find out.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going, Raul? Good to see ya.
It's good to see you too.
Do you remember
the last time that we talked to each other?
In person?
Yeah.
Like we were doing mushrooms.
Yeah, or something like that. I think that's right. I actually didn't know the answer to that question and I just asked it for fun, but I think you're absolutely right.
I feel like it was, I don't know what year that was, but it was probably the time that we went to the woods, but not Wiley's woods, the cabin woods where we were like across, we stayed across the street on like a campsite.
Yes.
And then we went across the highway for the day and then came back at night to the woods and we boiled water on a campfire, something that didn't make any sense, but we did it anyway.
I literally haven't thought about that almost at all until pretty recently. And it's so funny that now I'm talking to you and you're absolutely right.
I feel like that was last time. No, I mean, I'm sure I've seen you since, like afterwards, but that was like the last significant time. But it was a pretty significant time. So that makes
it was very I'm fine significant.
With it. I'm fine with it. How you doing? Thing two that I don't want to talk about. Yeah.
Sarah.
Hi, Rob.
I'm so glad that we're talking.
I'm so happy. Highlight of my week, month, summer so far.
You are absolutely one of my favorite people. I'll get the context out of the way for everybody. You and I met when we should not have. We'll start it there.
Okay.
You were in the high school dance program when we met.
It was.
And I had just moved to Winston. This was like 2008. And I think I even met you when I visited, like before I even moved there. I think it was when
you were not living there yet. You were just there for like a weekend or a smidge of time.
I think I was doing my, I think I was maybe doing my interview.
I was at your house.
Yeah.
Or not your house, somebody else's house.
It would later be my house.
Yeah.
What would later be my house for a little while.
Yeah,
I think you're definitely the person. This is totally true. So I didn't know that School of the Arts had a high school thing really at all. I found out about School of the Arts through Brandon. I've told this story before with him and with other people. The very short version is I wasn't going to go to school at all as far as college. Brandon went off to School of the Arts right out of high school. I was about to like give up on college completely after trying out a couple things that didn't work. And he was like, you should come here. Ba-ba-da, I end up over there. But in the course of that kind of experience of him letting me know about it, we didn't really talk about like, oh, and there's this like kind of robust high school program here, drama, dance, music. Like there's a bunch of kids here in high school. I just like didn't know that. And then I literally like visited for the first couple of times. And I think the second time and the first time, no high school thing even came up. The second time I visited was when I interviewed to try to go there. And I met you and everyone was hanging out and you were just hanging out like everybody else. They're like, oh, no, she's like 16 years old and in high school. And I was like, well, she's like locally like, no, there's a whole high school program on this campus at the same time as us. And sometimes we hang out. I'm like, what the fuck is this place?
Correct.
You're like my patient zero for high schoolers on this on the Pickle campus. You're Pickle Zero for me. That's I was like, what do you hilarious. Mean? And also, does it help minor. That she looks 19? Let's forget about it.
She's a child. Yeah. Yeah. For real. That's what it is. That's exactly
But we've known each other for this like whole time because, of course, your relationship with the school went far beyond being 16 and being in the high school program there, which we can get into in a couple seconds. But let's just start at the beginning. Sarah Seeger, where are you from?
I am from Northern New Jersey, born and raised.
Bridging Tunnel girl.
Yes, 1 hour outside the city. And actually went to the city a lot for dances, like elementary school, middle school kid. And then I was like, this is not sustainable. as far as like back and forth. And I was like, I have to find somewhere to like hone in on this whole dance thing that doesn't require me to get in and out of the city every single day with my, you know, it was just taking up so much time. And I was like, School of the Arts. I wonder if that would work out if I auditioned, if I would get in, if it would happen.
I want to get to how someone in that part of the country finds out about that school in a second. But let me go back even further to your going into New York City at what age to do dancing stuff? What was the earliest?
Like regularly on a weekly basis, probably 11. 11, 12, 13, 14. I was there like every Saturday and Sunday all day long, like 8-hour days dancing.
You start in
but
ballet?
I was at my, no, like, yes, sort of. But it's like jazz and tap and contemporary and modern. I had to take ballet, but I went to a ballet, formal ballet school in New Jersey that was like Russian training, and it was great. But I was like, I'm not going to be a ballet dancer. Like, I knew that pretty well. Like, by the time I was 10, I was like, this is not going to work out for me. But there's not like very great jazz and musical theater and modern training in my hometown. So they were like, well, you should entertain taking her to the city. So I started doing that by the time I was 11, because they just had more opportunities there for all those things. And for ballet.
I got to go even farther back, because this even sounds like chapter three. So here's the question then, but no, this is legit. You just named like five different genres of dance that could not be farther apart. And you were like, I got to do all of them. Of course, fucking obviously. Yes. Not obviously, I apologize. But for some of us, there are like tap, you take tap. Or like when you're a kid, you take ballet because your parents give you an after school activity. They want to, you know, it's physical. You learn some coordination. One or two. You just said that at 11, you're like, we got to crank this up to make sure we're getting all six of these genres handled at the same time. We got to go to New York City. So back me up a little bit. What happens first? And then how does it develop into, I need to be this well-rounded dancer that knows it all? Like, cause that you don't start there.
No, it's definitely not starting there. I started with like tap first. I was seven.
At what
age? For a year.
Seven.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then next year I did tap and jazz, two classes a week. I wanted to expand the repertoire.
And where are you doing this at? Like a local dance school or
North Jersey School of Dance Arts in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Yeah.
After
school.
And
then by year three, it was like twice a week for the first year or two.
Okay.
Jazz and tap.
Yeah, because I want to help me because like, I'm trying to understand the progression. This is not normal for me to understand.
No, I would say it's not normal for many people. I would not say it's like the healthiest experience as a young child. But well, then by the time I was eight, it was like, oh, I really want to dance. Like, this is like kind of what I want to do with my life. And my parents were like, okay. And my teacher was like, but she needs to go to ballet. That's a requirement, which is an understood thing of all dance. You have to take ballet class. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll take ballet class, but I also want to do jazz and I also want to keep taking tap, but I don't want to just do the best, highest level jazz class. I also want to go to the beginner jazz class and the beginner musical theater and the advanced musical theater and the tap, rock.
What is that coming from? Why do all of that instead of double down and take extra classes in the same shit?
I don't even really know. I was just like, I just want to do it all the time. I just like wanted my whole evenings to be like obsessive. This is what I had to do. And so I did that for like when I was 9 and 10, I went from taking two classes a week to I think like 8 the next year. And then it was like 15 the year after that. And it was like 15 for until I went to NCSA and that became like a different thing. But it was like, no, this is like what I had to do. And I had to learn everything because it was like, I knew I wasn't going to be a ballet dancer. Like that became pretty evident. Early on, I was like, this is not for me. I respect the training.
Which
but this
part
is-
of it was not for you? Like what part of it made you go, it's not my gig?
I think the like super formality of it, the hyper formality and also body type. Like I was already like developing muscle and quad and like, I know that the ballet world is like changing, but at the time this is like
rail thin only.
Yeah. And I was like, my best friends growing up were like, just like that. And I was like, I don't know. That's not really like where I'm naturally at 8. Like, do I really know? So then I just kind of like started adding more. But then by the time it got serious, I was like, I can't, if I stay with my training at my hometown dance studio, which I love and adore and am still very close with the director, if I stayed there, I would have quit because I was in the tap, jazz, modern musical theater realm because it was really, really good at ballet. I knew I could stay there for ballet. It was producing like successful Trinas. I could stay there, but if I wasn't challenged enough. So I was like, Mom, Dad, you got to start taking me into the city. And in being in the city for a couple of years, then teachers started whispering things like School of the Arts and other types of conservatories. Because for a second, they were like, well, why don't you get a New York address and go to high school in the city? Like go to LaGuardia or yeah. like professional performing arts. You know, we were like entertaining that. But then my parents were like, wait a second. We're not buying a New York apartment just so you can go to high school in right. New York. Like that's bananas. Like no way. But that was how you could do it if you had a New York State address.
Here's the thing that I want to clarify for that too, because you're debating two very different things here financially, which I do find fascinating. Because I grew up in Texas where it's like none of this is an option. If you wanted to go to private school, it had to be a Christian thing. And other than that, there were like different programs, but shit was weak. So what you're dealing with are two different things that I'm very familiar with now because I went to one and then I also ended up at college at the other. So to clarify for everyone, in New York City, there are multiple performing arts high schools that are public schools that you do not have to pay money to go to. You just got to get into it. They're very hard to get into, but once you get in, it's a public school and it's paid for.
You're in. Right.
But what you have to have in order to qualify for that public school is a New York City address. So you've got to be a city kid to do it. So Sarah's parents are contemplating the notion of renting an apartment in New York City and paying that cost to save on her going to the school versus paying actual tuition, housing, all of that kind of stuff to send you to North Carolina to a sleepaway conservatory. That's a better deal than renting yeah. an apartment. You would think just renting an apartment would be an easy thing to do, but no, tuition, room, and board, all of it bundled together and full sleepaway is cheaper right. in North Carolina than to just have like a tiny one bedroom shithole apartment that you could write an address on.
Right. But it was also like the logistics of, can we let her live in this apartment at 14 by herself? No. But if she's living in a dorm and there's chaperones and there's like supervision yes. and there's like other things, that seems a little bit safer for them because there was no way. My parents were not interested in moving to New York City.
Right.
They were going to have the address, nor would it be feasible to like be in class at 8 a.m. coming from where I lived in New Jersey. Like
of
I
course.
Would just like so I, that wouldn't work. So that thankfully, I mean, I like to think that would have been fun, but it's good that it did happen. It was a although, conversation for a while. It was.
I went to school in, so you didn't name it, but because it's not as good as the two you did. But there was another school in Manhattan at the time called Talent Unlimited. I don't know if it's even still uh-huh. there. But it was, we also had a dance programs. Another would have been also on your list of auditions, but it wasn't as prestigious as the other two. But we had mad commuters, dude. We had girls coming yeah. in from Staten Island who got on the ferry every fucking morning before the sun came up just to come to that yeah. school. Like the commute yeah. was real for a lot of them. I lived in Hell's Kitchen and the school was on the east side in the 60s. So all I had to do was like cut across and yep. go up three yep. stops. Easy.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I had to live by Port Authority bus terminal. So that was the trade-off. But either way, it is a real Not thing. Ideal. It is a real yep. thing
People
to do that.
People do it. And I think because I was there on the weekends, mixed up with a lot of like teenage dancers, a lot of them were going to these schools. So they were all convincing me that that was going to be the best move because right. they were like, if you really want to do this, you should not just stick to your home bound thing.
So what's sleepaway conservatory like for you then?
wild. I still can't even believe I was there for 4 years. I think by the time I graduated, there were only six of us that had been there for all 4 years of high school. So it's insane. You have to, I mean, I don't even know how to sum it up into words, but for a while, like I had gone to summer intensives, which is common for dancers at a young age. If they go away to like intensive for 4 weeks and they stay at a college campus and they have counselors, but they're dancing all day. And the year before I went to NCSA, I went to their intensive to see if I could like get used to being on the campus there. And so when school started, sleepaway high school, it felt like a summer intensive. which I had been to many times. But then I was like, wait, I have homework and like academics and like things to do. And then there's all these adults floating around that are like somehow okay with the fact that there's little 14-year-olds frolicking around at the same time. And we're all in the cafeteria together and we're all dancing together too, because the dance program was combined. I want to say it took me like 3 weeks to get used to it. And then I was like, this is it. I'm good. Like I felt so at home. I didn't miss home. I rarely got homesick, even with all the friends that I grew up with. Like they understood this is where I wanted to be. That's where I wanted to be. And I think 3 weeks was all it took for me to be like, I'll be here for the next 4 years. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You know, that was my impression of meeting you after you'd been there for a couple of years, I guess, at that point. And you seemed, first of all, you seem like more of an adult than some of the other people. And that's a thing we've talked about on this show a lot that I'm really interested to dig into, is the effect of these institutions on everybody broadly. And I think as it relates to growth, maturity, responsibility, and things like that. There are other things at play, obviously, that we also talked about on the show as far as the really negative, harmful impacts of this education on people when they're really young, because it's obviously not for everybody, first of all. And second of all, what are the ethical implications of impressing upon such young minds standards such as the ones present in ballet or classical music or things that are like, it's been, you know, people spend lifetimes trying to get great at, and we're trying to tell a 15-year-old to get it perfect today. It's kind of fucking a lot. And there's a right and a wrong way to do that shit. I think we can agree. Right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But I think that one of the things I'm very interested to kind of get your opinion on and just kind of wax on it. I have contested on this show, or I don't know if contest is the right word, but I've kind of put forth this idea that it is a far more precarious situation to go from high school in the spring, walk across the stage, and then go to NCSA or a school like it in the fall with no break, especially when you're coming out of like hustling to be the best, the thing that got you into the school. You go into the fall with all these other people that are the best, and you're just like in this momentum. And that versus taking some time off for any reason, going to another program, getting a job, blah, 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 some kind of gap. Those people seem to be less, for lack of a better term, fucked up by what happens to them at School of the Arts.
Yeah,
let's be honest. Let's cut to the chase. They feel like they are less affected in a negative way because they just, there's some kind of perspective. So here's what I'm curious about, right? I've said that. Mm-hmm. I think it's better to do it this way versus that. Mm-hmm. You technically went even farther in the direction that I'm kind of saying not to do in a way, right? But like by the point I've brought it before, I'm saying don't start it too early. So if that's the case, why are you so mature and grounded? Which I think is probably, you know, you're going to have to like eat some humble pie a little bit to talk about. But I mean, like, for real, when I met you when you were 16, it was like you were 20. And I was really shocked to find out you were so young. And to this day, when I talk to you or interact with you at all, I'm like, you've always had that. Maybe the answer is either start it earlier or wait later. Like, is that, do you think that's related to your journey and other people you encountered in your journey?
Maybe. I'm not sure, honestly. I don't know where I got it from, but the only thing that like keeps popping up in my head is like there was this like intense obsession with this art form that I like had to do. And it was like there was no distraction. Well, there was, of course, with being a rebel and like getting in trouble, because that certainly came into play over the years. But it was like I felt like the people who came to School of the Arts that we're all, well, first off, I want to say every single person is crazy that comes to School of the Arts.
Sure, a little bit.
even if you're like completely grounded because you had a perspective and you're coming later, or if you're just too young to know that you're being crazy, which is sometimes what I think happened to me. I was like 14 and I didn't know how intense I was being until now I'm like in my 30s. I'm like, wait a second. That is like not, if my child did that, I'd be like, whoa, you need to relax. So I think there's an ignorance is bliss to like how insane the young people are that go there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I think everybody has this, like, for lack of a better word, like religion to their art that like matures them beyond like the right, what a normal person was doing at that age. So I was just like, even growing up in my hometown, I was like, well, I want to know, I already know my career and I'm nine. And so I was forced to like, if, and I understood that if I wanted to do it, time was ticking because you're not going to dance till you're, you know, past
of course.
A certain age. So it's like, you got to do it now. So you're like all of a sudden thinking long-term in as far as like taking care of your body and like training and being versatile and staying in class and like all these things, because that the career is short-term. So you become like mature because you have a limited time to actually live it anyway.
Yeah.
So I feel like when I was 14,
specific it
was
to like, dance too, because there's only so many art forms that have that lifespan, you know, as long as your hands work, you can play the cello till you're like fucking 80 years old.
Right. And beyond, I'm sure. And I'm not to say that you can't dance until you're like, whatever.
Yeah, but we
like,
all it's fucking know what you're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
It's not the same. It's not the same. And it's like time is ticking. Like I remember, and again, this goes back to like, this is not a healthy thing that I think I was doing at the time, but like, I would be devastated when I was 12 because I was losing time to dance. Like that time was running away. So like, you get to School of the Arts and you're surrounded by the people who are the best. And you either have to like put on your grown-up cap even more because you're now it's extra competitive, or you just like sink.
And it's interesting, right? Because your high school years, no wonder you felt like you were in college when you were in high school, because your high school years, as they were relative to your time in the career, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I ain't got time to start colleging at fucking 18. Right. Are you kidding? I need to college now. Then I need to adult at 19.
Yes, totally. So I feel like it was if I didn't have the like a ridiculous obsession and passion and love for this art form, I don't think I would have the like old soul personality that I have. It was like, it was developed because I was like, I have XYZ amount of time to do this. So I have to like grow up.
How many people did you say joined you freshman year that graduated with you senior year? Like six?
I think six. And I think like,
were they like that too?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think
we don't have to say names, but I'm just as a case study, I'm interested. Oh, you mean of your entire freshman class across, what is it? Just the two. And then senior year, you got drama students added in.
Yeah. And
they don't count.
Junior year.
Well, no, they don't count for this. I'm talking about people who spent 4 years of high school at NCSA. That's specific.
Yeah, you also have visual artists. They come in
junior year. Yes.
Yeah, the VA.
It's a two-year program.
But of the people who like were there for all 4 years, I think there were six of us, and I think four of us were dancers and two of us were musicians.
What was that group like? Just in personality, like, did they all have that grounded vibe or did they not?
Some did. But then it sort of fizzled in recent years. You know, like I don't think it's something that people have maintained. I also think that a couple of the people who graduated, I have to go back and like look at my yearbook, which is somewhere. But hilarious. They were commuters. Like very few people lived in the dorms for 4 years. I think there were even fewer of us who the people who were commuters like got to go back home to their parents' house every single day. There were a very, very small handful of us that made it all 4 years, which made it be like you had to be invited back.
High school.
Yeah, you had to be invited back each year. So that was one element. So I would see people not get asked back, or people just were like, this place is bananas, I'm out.
Or maybe they got a job, or maybe they wanted another program, or there's so many reasons people could leave that.
Right.
I mean, you're not
or
invested.
Injured.
Yeah.
so yeah, I don't know. I would say that some of us, but I don't know if it lasted as long at, that's the thing that's really interesting. Like how many people are still at it?
Did you do an undergrad program when you left?
I did an undergrad in recent years. I started in 2016. So that was 6 years after I graduated from high school. And
so what
did
you do for those 6 years? That's what I want
to know. I danced.
Tell me what's up.
I moved to New York in 2010. I had an apartment in Jersey City, a mile away from the train. It was the cheapest place to live. And I started auditioning right away. I had a wonderful gig with my parents where they gave me 2 years to find a professional dancing contract. And they were like, for 2 years, we're going to put you in an apartment that we think is feasible. It is far away. It is unsafe, but it is cheap. And we will help you with your rent. I had to meet like a certain portion of my rent and they paid a certain portion. And they were like, and you have to take college courses. Anywhere of whatever you want. So I was like, close my eyes, didn't actually care about anything other than dance. They were like, if after 2 years you do not have full-time employment, like as a dancer, you either can decide to go to college or we are like no longer supporting you financially.
You have to do it on
like,
your own.
You have to figure it out. We're not helping you with food
That's
or anything.
That's a great fucking deal, dude.
It was a solid fucking deal. And the first year I did a fellowship at the Ailing School, which was like a scholarship program for 3 months to kind of like get my feet wet. I had to be in class every day. It was like a structured thing and then go to auditions and then did a couple small projects with some alumni the first year, very low money, not like a ton of work, but I had some rehearsal commitments and I took like marketing at like Berkeley Community College. Like it wasn't like a thing I cared about, but I did it because that was part of the deal. And like I had to take one or two classes a semester. It wasn't like I had to be in school full time. That wasn't part of the gig. And then I got a full-time job in August of 2011. And that was became my world. And I would dance 40 hours a week, like 32, 35 weeks out of the year, had enough to make unemployment when we were off. And I would like babysit in the off time, but I was professionally dancing full-time.
What was
until
that
the
gig?
Pandemic. With Ryu, Dance New York. Looks like Riolt, but it's R-I-O-U-L-T, a company. It's like a classical modern dance company. And that was my full-time hustle for a long time. And the company did not make it through the pandemic. So I lost that job in 2020. But it was like, yeah, basically, but then it was like kind of some virtual work for a little while. So I say I was there 10 years, but it was a little less. It was like 9.5.
So you did an undergrad degree while you were working there?
Yep. It was a school called the LEAP program, which stands for Liberal Education for Arts Professionals. And it is a program in which they give you life achievement credit with your professional experience. And you
life
take
achievement
like,
credit. What does that mean?
I got a BA in dance, but never had to take a dance class.
Ah,
because
cool, man.
Yeah, because I was like a professional dance. All you had to have was like 2 years of professional experience. And at that point, I had six or whatever. And they count your professional life experience towards credit. And then every semester I had to take like various liberal arts courses one class a semester, and I did it straight through with no breaks for 4.5 years and got a BA in dance from a college in California, which is the college that hosts this Liberal Education for Arts Professionals program. That is mostly dancers and circus performers that go to the school. People
that,
that like
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so
man, I want to get a degree in like film and TV production, even though I went to drama school. Because, man, I should send that. I made like 200 episodes of TV now. How fucking much do I got to do?
But this program was like geared for dancers because it's so common that dancers don't go to college.
Because you belay the thing in order to dance.
Right, right. Yeah, and then I had this whole fear of being like, oh my God, I need to quit because I need to go to college because what am I going to do when I can't dance? And then I'm going to be 4 years in the hole because I have no degree. Like, you know, and then this brilliant person several
system.
Years. Yeah. They were like, wait a second. There's a program that we can like help dancers do this. So we would meet on like Sundays in the evening and classes were either Sunday nights or Monday nights because Monday nights are dark nights from Broadway. So like it was a lot of Broadway people or Sunday nights from 6 to 10 because the people would just do their matinees and then go to school afterwards. So it was awesome. It was
that
a really
awesome.
Cool program. And I finally got a BA, which is not important at all.
That was going to be my next question. So you got it. And how many times has that come up since you got it?
Zero. Like, I mean, now. Like
I will never forget sitting in the financial aid office. And Jane Kamiyab, who was in charge of financial aid forever. I don't know if she still does it, but she's a saint. There's so many broke ass kids who could not have gone to that school if she didn't know how to find that money. She's so good at it. Yeah. Even if we had to borrow it, whatever. She always figured it out on like the day you were going to get kicked out of school for no money.
Of
she would
course.
Like,
of course.
She's the best.
Yeah.
But I'm literally sitting in her office and she's like bailing me out, getting me the money so I can keep going or so I can start. And she was like, so I see you're not signed up for the degree program. And I was like, yeah, I'm academically like not there. So I don't think that's going to be a good plan for me. Plus, I don't know if I'll be able to get up every day at that time, if I'm being honest with you. So I will work late and very hard on that stuff. But no, I'm not interested in that. And she was like, you know, you don't get a discount for not doing that. Like it's, you have to pay the same. And we have a fair amount of people who come back later because they want the degree and they have to pay for tuition again to take the classes. Really try to talk me out of it. And I was like, here's what I need you to understand. I didn't have to tell her. I could have just said, I understand, but no, thank you. But of course I was like, if you make me do that, I will quit. At some point it will overwhelm me and I'll end up on like academic probation and then they'll kick me out of the play or whatever the fuck I'm working on.
Which is what you're actually there to do.
Which is why I'm there. So it's like, let's just call a spade a spade. I'm not going to be able to do that. I suck at it. I always have. I got records, receipts showing you I will not do my homework. So
yeah,
let's just not fucking do that. And she was like, all right, that's what it is. And I have to say, Sarah, not only have I been a professional teacher since I left school, no one's ever asked one time.
I know.
And when I do hope it will help because of where I went, they still don't give a fuck. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. I mean, maybe it helps somebody. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And the thing is, like, it's this weird pressure that you put on yourself or that your parents put on, or like society puts on you to like get a college degree. And I hit like my late 20s and people were like, why don't you have that figured out? And I was like, well, I certainly don't know what any of my other interests are. Still don't really know. And so they were like, well, there's this, and people in the dance world started whispering this program, and I was, and it's actually like insanely cheap for college because it's made for dancers. So it just seemed like a no-brainer kind of thing to do.
I love
and
that I don't, that exists. It's like a stopgap until we fix it.
Exactly. Exactly. And like now I have an undergrad. Do I need it for anything I'm doing right now? No. But like, was I able to do both and also be in a program where like I was going on tour for 6 weeks to Germany and Italy, and they were like, just don't do it. Just don't do it. Just like take a break. We'll like take your paper when you get back.
It's like my Johnson & Johnson card I have in my wallet. You know, I needed it at the time and everyone was like, you gotta do it, man. And I was like, okay. And then it's like been a really long time since anyone's asked to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Nobody cares. It's
fine. I love that. I think that's really cool. I think so. Okay. Then let me ask you this. So how old are you right now?
31.
You're 31 right now. We just made a whole big deal about your timeline and how long, you know, you did college early and all that kind of stuff. And you got your degree from your place that gave you one. Where are you at in this journey that is shorter than everybody else's? We talked to a lot of actors on this show. We talked to everybody, and I have talked to every school, but at large, we talked to a lot of actors. And I feel like we also talked to a lot of like designer filmmaker kind of people. I feel like they get to do the thing a lot longer than you traditionally get to do the thing. So with your perspective, and I've known you for Jesus Christ, more than half your life.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And it's true.
It's true. Yeah.
And like right at the thing. And so with that in mind, on this journey that you've been on, where do you find yourself in that career, in that arc, in that timeline that you've been worried about since you were like 11 or whatever?
Yeah, such a good question. I
just started doing this.
You're such a natural. I will say that, okay, so I lost my full-time job in 2020 and I've been freelancing for the last 3 years. I've like been consistently working as a dancer for the most part up until the last 6 months or so, and then still go to ballet class every single day, but not like currently rehearsing for many things. But I physically feel like I am at the peak of my physical capability.
You look strong as fuck.
I also teach group fitness. That's the side hustle,
Dude, the shoulders and the arms are like working for you. It's awesome.
Thank you. You're very kind. But I feel physically like I am, that they talk about, like, especially for modern dance, that like you're going to get to a certain, not for ballet, but for modern dance, like you get to like your early 30s. And that's like when your body, especially if you've been performing for a long time, like your body has figured things out and it's like, oh my God, I am like super in my person physically. I understand what's going to work for my body, what's not going to work for my body. I understand how to bounce back from pain, like things that like you kind of figure out and you're at the peak of it. And I feel like I'm right there right now. And then it starts to go down the other side where like, then it becomes more work. Not to say that it's not work to maintain what I'm doing. It's significant right. work. It's full-time work. But like, then you start
It'll
to get to the other side.
It'll never be as easy as it is right now though, for you.
No,
is that what you're saying?
I should reframe. It was very easy when I was in my early 20s. There was way less maintenance involved. There's significant maintenance involved now, but the reward is like, I feel like my body makes choices that are smarter than they were when I was 20, even as a performer, but even as a technician, like as a dancer, like I feel grounded. It was a piece of cake when I was in my early 20s, like no pain, like whatever. Things are just flying all over. And now it's like, I have to work strategically to be able to maintain the physical place I'm at, but my body is like respectful of that work. And it's like, it does it because you've done it for so long. It's like, just like, I don't even know. I can't even think of a comparison, but at a certain point you do all that work and you still have to do that work because your body will fall apart if you don't, and you're not getting the reward.
Like, it's like you have a little military inside your body and they're really well trained. So
yes,
when you're like,
super trained.
Do this, you're like, we got it.
We got it. Like, I have years of experience in my belt. I have done all my PT exercises today. I've gone to ballet class for 2 hours. I am ready to do whatever you need me to do. And I will execute. Then I will go home and I will take a bath and I will ice and I will roll out and I will like take care of my body so that I can do it the next day. And I feel physically like I'm in a really strong place that might not last for very much longer. Mm. But unfortunately, the sad part about all of that, like getting to this point in your career and in your body, is there's not a lot of work. So it's like you're kind of like peaking physically and artistically, like you're at the top of your game. There's probably a little bit further to go up, but the next couple steps are like down and there is not any jobs. But there's not a lot of jobs. So it's like a weird time. And
if you're a professional CEO, that's pretty cool. But like, what do you do? Like, if you get if you're not a job, like you got someone else who's the CEO has to get fired, and they have to not hire that guy who's underneath him.
Right.
Bring you in. This is tough. Yeah. The higher up you go, the less there are.
Yeah, and it's bizarre. Like, I feel I'm in this weird place now where like I would love to be dancing full time like I was. Three years ago, like up in that was, you know, the first 9 years or so of my career, I would love to, and if that opportunity presented itself, I would take it in a heartbeat just because I know that time is limited and I don't want to like miss out on doing it. But there are none of those opportunities. So there are, but they're very few, fewer than ever before since pandemic. So now the ability to maintain this like level that I've gotten to, which is not by not doing anything. It's by like constantly taking care of yourself and preparing and like keeping yourself at this place is a job in and of itself that you don't get paid for. That is getting harder to do when there's no work coming back to you, like no paid rehearsals, no performances. And you're like, why am I doing this? This is like insane. And I feel like a lot of people come to that conclusion a lot earlier in their lives for dance. Just because it is a lot, it's really, really hard to like stick at it as long as this even. But it's heartbreaking because I would love to keep going, but there's not a lot of opportunity and it's getting harder to maintain where I would like to be. And you're just like waiting for a gig. And waiting for a gig doesn't mean I can just like work a side job and make money and then go to an audition. Like I have to do PT every day. I have to like go to class for 2 hours a day. I have to like be able to stretch and do all these things. Otherwise it's not there. Or then I don't do it. And then I go to an audition and you get hurt. And then you're dealing with that. So it's a weird thing. And then you're kind of like trying to weigh the pros and cons of like trying to maintain where you're at without work. Or just kind of noticing that like maybe it's time to put your energy and your efforts into other things that are going to fuel you long term as far as like another career goes.
That's and a it's weird like a time. Double bummer because you also are talking about how much potential you feel in your body and in what you can do. You're like, man, what a waste. Someone should really hire me because I'm fucking capable of crushing shit right now. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I don't want to say that I'm like that, that's like, that I am that or that I'm worth that, but it's like, it's a really weird thing to feel like you're dancing better than you ever have and there's not that many jobs. And you're like, when you do go to auditions, like there's a whole new generation of people. So investing in a 31-year-old is different than hiring. Like, I got my full-time job when I was 19, which was young, but like, that was a good choice because then he had me for 9 years.
Sarah, what's wrong with saying that you're worth that?
Nothing really. It's just like not a thing that we're taught to do.
My amateur opinion is that that's okay for you to think that, you know, I think that that's a thing that's really tough about going to these schools and having these experiences where, you know, I hear your story, of which I knew a tiny piece, but now that I kind of have heard a bigger picture here, I think, you know, up until this point, or let's say up until the pandemic, for example, because that's also around the time that you finished your thing, right? Your degree and stuff. So around that time, one could say, you know, up to that point, everything, you really played it really fucking well, man. Like, you really, really did. Like, there's so many off ramps and turns that you could have taken that would have led you away from what you had been dreaming to do with your life for so long. And you seem to, and also my amateur opinion, have done it all with, you know, kind of grounded, mature, like kind of graceful approach, you know. And I don't know I've never heard anyone say a negative thing about you. I'm sure, as we all are, we have people out there who don't agree with everything we've ever done, but goodness, Sarah, when I talk to people, they love you. I love you. You make a great impression. And I think that that's like an energy that you take everywhere. Ever since I've known you, you've been that way. And one of the things that always struck me about you that I really appreciate is throughout the last, 15, 16 years I've known you, every time we've ever spoken almost, you've asked me if I'm happy. You don't ask me what I'm doing. You don't ask me what I'm up to. You don't ask me any, it's always like, hey, you know, maybe a quick, how's it going? How's it going with that rhetorical thing? And then, are you happy? And I'm like, man, I almost wait to hear from you so I can give myself that check-in. It's such a compassionate and empathetic way to connect with people. And that's just to give you an example of anyone listening of what I'm saying about you, Sarah, is that through everything that you've done, you really seem to be doing it right in the simplest way. And so I'm curious how that goes into processing this moment that you're in where more recently it feels like, why is that dried up, the return on that? Because you've done it so right for so long, and not just like technically right, but like empathetically, spiritually. Like, you're someone who's played the right cards, that done the right things, and more recently it feels like maybe the universe isn't paying you back the way they have.
Yes and no. It's weird. I don't think the universe like owes me anything, and I think as heartbreaking as I am to not be working right now and dancing, I do find myself like frustrated, and I go to auditions and I very frequently make it pretty like through a good chunk and then we'll get beaten out. And again, it's optics. I'm sure it's similar in the acting world too. It's height, size, color, shape, like so many things come into play. Right. And when you make it to that point, when you make it that far in auditions, even at this point, and that is the deciding factor, that I'm like, anybody but any one of us could have done the job at that point. So like, I understand they have to be specific about reasons why you maybe aren't getting it. So I try not, it's something as I get like, everybody gets butthurt about it, right? Like you want to be hired because you're the most, you know, whatever, like whatever you're saying, you did all the things right. Like you want to get hired for that reason and you hope that that carries you through, but sometimes it doesn't because it's looks and it's whatever. So I get butthurt about those things. And they suck, but that's the industry. And I've known that since I was 9. So if you forget it, Sarah, like, remember, this is like, you signed up for this. So I find myself frustrated, but then I like, I don't know. I also feel like I have a ton of gratitude because I know a decent handful of people that went to MCSA that never got to do the things that I got to do, like that never got to tour to Italian opera houses and perform at the Joyce Theater in New York City and have their picture in the New York Times 6 or 7 times. Like, you know, like there's things that like I worked really, really hard for and I got to do. So when I'm at this point and I physically feel like I can still keep going and nothing's coming, it's annoying. It's frustrating because it's been my whole world, my whole life. And I do not want to throw in the towel at this point when I am dancing what I think is better than ever before. But then it's like, okay, but look at the 13 years of your time in New York. Like I solely survived by being a dancer. And that is not a thing that I don't know that many people, honestly, that has been their world for that long. And so if things don't come and it is time to move on in the next year or two, whatever, like it's completely heartbreaking. It's never going to feel like the right time, but I have done so much that I am proud of that. Like I would never, that I know so many people like want to be dancers and want to be able to have a year of what my schedule used to be and didn't get to do it for whatever reason. And so it's like, I just kind of like come back to gratitude because I do feel like lucky, but I also know that I worked hard. So like, yes, I don't want to say I didn't deserve those things, but like that hard work pays off mentality certainly did for me for a long time. But it's weird. It's weird to be like doing this your whole life since you were like obsessed with it when you were 9 or 8, when it became like your world, and then to be like nearing an end. This is the thing I cried about when I was 12. You know, it's like just bizarre. You're like, huh, what do you do after this? You know?
How much do you feel like your self-esteem and your personal value, like as human, as Sarah, like how much of that is tied to being a dancer?
Significant. Like,
sure.
Yeah, tons. Significant. It's like been my whole identity. And it's been like my whole thing of like, well, I'm a dancer. I have to be. And that's interesting because there's so many dancers in New York City that go, especially freelance now with pandemic, that go gig to gig and they maybe have a couple months off, but they still identify as a dancer because they're in between gigs. And to me, it's like, I haven't had a show in months. It just sounds horrible. This is just like my psychosis. I feel like I'm not a dancer anymore. Even though I still am, I feel like I'm not. So it's like retraining your brain to be like, no, your confidence, your values, your identity can still be dance if you are not in the studio every day. And that's like, that doesn't seem normal. That doesn't seem right to me. So I'm like, it's weird. But I will also say that in like,
true.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've also say like in the last couple of years since pandemic, I'm sure countless dancers and artists went through this thing where like you had to learn to identify in different areas of your life and be like grow into those parts. So like, am I super thrilled in my marriage? Yes. Do I love having a dog? Am I excited about a family? Am I excited about the things that will come that will shape me even more than what dance has been? Absolutely. But I am like, I feel like I don't know who I am without it. And I know I exist. I know Sarah's in there without dance, but it's like, it feels scary to see what that is. You know? Yeah.
That makes any sense. But I feel like if you approach that change with the same grounded grace that you approached being a dancer, you're going to be just fine. I mean,
yeah,
it's scary because it's in the dark, but like there's, you do know, I think almost for a fact that there's nothing in that dark that is going to kick your ass. I mean, first of all, look at those shoulders. Second of all, I feel like what you've been through, that you put yourself through, but what you've been through is, you know, it's like when people go to train through the Olympics or they go to be an astronaut or one of these things that just is like, pushes us to the limit of what a human being is capable of doing. And you've clearly spent a really long time doing that. Like, and you do it also, it seems like in your mind and in your heart. You know, we talked about the very beginning of this, like one of our last and most significant memories was like tripping in the woods together. And I really feel like, first of all, that was one of the only times I was with you and the group on the same day, because that group of people that would trip kind of was like a traveling circus of people doing it that would come. Not everyone was always there, but like sometimes Brandon was there, Wiley was there, whoever. And it would like change. And there was a bunch of occasions where you were with them and I wasn't. That was the only time you and I were ever together.
Yep.
But we went out of our way, I feel like, as a group of people. And it's why I really like that group of people. And that whole circus was really fun and really safe. And I think it was because we were all kind of not there to like get fucked up. It was like we all had kind of an interest in exploring more about what it meant to be a person and what it meant to exist on Earth. And we found that, you know, dropping a cap in the woods was like a fucking accelerated super leap in the journey of figuring all that stuff out. And
yeah,
so much love in that group, and very little romance. I want to make clear in this group of people, it was like very rare for people to be like a couple and stuff. It didn't happen very often. It's just a lot of like platonic friends that like deeply, deeply loved each other and like would go and do drugs in the woods. And we would always emerge from it with like, I love you. Like it was so, it was such a connected thing. And I feel like the people who go after those experiences in life, whether they're through art or through safe hallucinogenic experiences or what have you, having families, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to be all right.
Yeah. I remember coming out of that woods trip. Well, one of them, I don't remember, but I think it was that one where like, I always had this like little like snippet of like something I would want to remember, like a little one liner or like a little thing that I take away. And I think that time my takeaway was like, it's not that big of a deal, in quotes. Like it's, and that was like, and because I think as artists and as dancers, and I don't know, I can't, I have a lot of actor friends, but I don't know that world as far as like how it lives in your being. But like as dancers, it's like, this is it. Like, this is how you eat. This is how you sleep. This is how you, the shoes you wear. This is like how you like, if you go out, if you don't go out, are you going to class? Are you training? Like all this thing is like your world. And it seems like so intense. And if you like let go of any of those things, you're going to crumble. And my like, I remember coming out of that trip being like, it's not that big of a deal. Like it's just dance. And that's been like sticking with me, especially in the last 6 months. Like it's nothing is that big of a deal. Not to take away like people's feelings and anxieties, because I do think they're important. But like, and that big of a deal. Like we all need to like just take a deep breath, you know? And I, that has like coming back to that thought helps me in these times where I'm like, what am I doing? Who am I? Like, I'm not working and it's not that big of a deal. It's not, it's going to be fine, because there are like a lot of other beautiful parts of life beyond what we even know at this point and what I've known so far as dance. And yes, you kind of touched on it earlier, but like for artists in general and dancers, anything else I've been told and I've seen it is, I don't use the word easier, but significantly easier than what we usually have to do. Like our work ethic as artists is in superb. It's like significantly larger than the standard work ethic. So you go into a different field and all of a sudden, like you just exist with this like discipline. And people are like, you can just relax. Like it happens to my husband all the time. It happens to a lot of other people that I've seen transition into different fields for, they're like, people just
go
like,
home.
Yeah. People just like, they're like calm and like relax at their jobs and are like confused when people want to go above and beyond. And so, yeah, I think there is space for like growth and success, especially with the work ethic, the transferable work ethic that exists in most art forms. Or Olympians or whatever, to move into something else. It is transferable. And then the paycheck will be bigger too. And you're like, huh, that ain't so bad.
But channel it, because if you find some place that doesn't give a shit that you're willing to work harder and they're not going to pay you any more for it, then you're just going to keep getting resentful of the fact that you show up an hour and a half early every day. And then one day you're like, why is this not paying off? And it's like, well, no one asked you to do that, Sarah. So what everybody else is doing, and we'll treat you the way we're going to treat everybody. And it won't be so weird. You're the one making it weird. And it sucks because you have to find that spot. That's like, ooh, you know what? It's a little bit more of an investment, but you should hire Sarah because she's not going to fuck around. Like, this is going to be her fucking life for the next however long this project is. And it's going to make a difference in the thing. And I think it is hard to recognize that. I mean, when I was trying to do stand-up comedy in LA in the beginning, I was going to these open mic places and, you know, I would like, even if I wasn't hosting, but it was a place I was comfortable. So I'm not like going up on stage at other people's places, but like, you know, I would go up and like untangle the mic cord. I would like throw trash away. Like, it's not my place. And but I'm just like, does it have to suck here while we're here? It doesn't have to. We could just like all kind of throw away a thing and not treat this place like someone's basement that we just like, you know, like Jesus.
Right.
And people were always like, dude, what are you trying to do? You trying to get hired here? I'm like, no, I'm just trying to not hate it here. Like, cause I want to do the thing, but no one treats it like they give a fuck. And you're right. Even in a world like that, which was artistic, which was like, you know, we were there to perform and have a good time and do an important creative thing we all wanted to get better at. It was a practice space, but because it wasn't, you know, it's gotta be the same thing with dance studios where every now and then you're like, I'll clean the fucking mirror. Fine. Well, we need to see our bodies.
Somebody give me a broom.
Yeah, fine. I don't want to do this. It's gross. I mean, I worked in enough dance studios in my TV career. Like, it's the same thing. You're just like, I don't care. I'll do it. Even though it's so not my job because I want
it. That's just certain personalities. And I think a lot of those people exist at NCSA. I do. I think so. Like, people that go above and beyond, because you're taught there that like that is above and beyond is the minimum.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there is no like less. And some people didn't want to do above and beyond and then they didn't do.
Like, yeah, but you also just learn it. It is above and beyond is the minimum, but it's not even above and beyond. Like, the truth is, like, I used to tell my roommates all the time, right? You owe the rest of the apartment a clean sink. Not because I give a fuck when you clean your dishes. I really don't care. But I need a clean sink to clean shit in, because it's not just a place to store things. It's like, say I want to clean my bong out and it's this big. And I'm like, it's big. I need room. Get your shit like, out
of the way. Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If you worked in a wood shop, you would put everything away at the end of the day. You would empty the sawdust thing. Like, you, we all owe each other a working space, you know, and sometimes that is viewed as, man, what are you trying to do, kiss ass? I'm like, the fact that you think this is me doing something extra is fucked up.
Yeah, and it's fucked up.
And I think that's what we encounter as people who spend our whole lives trying to do something right.
yeah. I also think there's like, I think it was one of the... I don't know exactly who said it to me, but it wasn't paraphrased in a way that I recall. But I also, like, having done ensemble work for so long, or like working with a group of people in the dance company, like, you're not, it's not a bunch of soloists. Like, we're dancing on stage together all the time. It's mostly an ensemble company. Maybe somebody has a solo every once in a while, but it's like, it's a group effort. These are all working at it to make the same thing be like accomplished for the audience. And somebody once said, like, we're only, like, it's so cliche and stupid, but you're only as strong as your weakest link. And I was like, I will never allow myself to be the weakest link. I will never allow it. Like, I don't want to be that person. I will set the standards that I am never going to be the weakest person in the room. I might not be, I don't care about being the best person in the room. I don't care about being perfect, but I am not going to be the person that pulls down the rest of the, like, thing we're trying to accomplish.
Whether I was just going to say, that's the right mentality. I think even expecting yourself to be the best can be a dangerous place to live. But if you can just,
I don't care.
Yeah, if you can just keep yourself from being the worst or the last one in the race, I'm serious. Yeah. Because if everyone's doing that, then the bottom's always coming up, right? Like, theoretically, if everyone's like, oh shit, well, I don't want to get eliminated. I just don't want to get eliminated. So I'm going to try to keep off the floor. Like, the floor keeps going up. I mean, that's better than everyone trying to kill.
It pushes people to be better.
Everyone trying to kill each other and be cutthroat. Well, then let me ask you this, and maybe I know we're almost out of time. This will be my last question. So if you think about a thing that is not physically dancing, doesn't mean it can't be dance related. But is there a thing that you think about, all that energy we just talked about, that special enthusiasm and discipline? Is there something that just sounds like super fucking fun to you to do? Fuck money. Fun. I would be good. And I would wake up every day being like, fuck yeah, I'm going to work. I'm going to be more than just not the worst.
Yeah. I have always had this little tiny inkling of a dream to run a brewery.
What?
And yeah.
That's fucking like, cool, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really interested in like owning it or necessarily like finding the space and building a brewery. Like I want to go into a brewery that's well established. I want to be like the stage manager of the brewery, and I want to deal with the staff, and I want to make sure that the brewery's like that the beer is working, that it's happening, that the people are aware of their schedule, that if there's a wedding coming in, that people know what they have to do, like deal with community involvement that's like going to participate at the brewery, like some sort of tag team thing. But I don't want to necessarily, and I want to make sure the beer is good, obviously, but I don't really want to create, I don't want to make my own beer. I just want to like run somebody else's thing that's already been established and then make it better. Like try my best to keep that mission like alive and well and thriving. That's my dream. That's been my dream for a while, like in the back of my head, like itching here.
Do you know people who are like possible mentors for that?
Not really. Like I have a bunch of bartender buddies in the neighborhood. I need to like get my feet wet in some more of the brewery scene around here. I mean, go to a lot of breweries. I love going to breweries.
I know a guy.
One of my favorite things. You know a guy.
I know a guy. And I think he's totally your vibe. He's a super cool guy. And cool. I will totally hook you up with this guy because he will tell you. I think he would totally take like a little time out. And he runs a brewery in Austin that is all about the beer and how many taps they have. And all they take the beer part of it really seriously. I don't know that it's a brewery technically, because I don't think they brew on site, but their whole deal is like, we have more fucking handles than anywhere else. And that's what they,
put me in contact with that person.
Yeah.
I know another person that like I met at a brewery in Pennsylvania that like lives close to my parents. And he's like, I know people in the city that work at different breweries. If you ever want to do this like years ago, if you ever are serious about this, like find me again. And I will put you in contact with a couple people who own breweries in the city. And I have to start at like, as like a bar back, which I've never done that before. And I don't even want to serve for that long. I just like want to logistically be in charge of operations, of keeping the brewery afloat and successful.
There's a guy I went to school of the arts who runs a bar in Manhattan. And his name is Max Stamper Brown. Did you ever meet him?
I think I did. Yeah.
Maybe. He's another pickle that you definitely connect with because he's been doing that game for a minute.
Yeah. That's such a cool thing about NCSA. We'll end on that note, but there are pickles fucking everywhere. Yeah.
Awesome.
So many generations, so many like places in the world that you end up being like, oh my God, you went to NCSA in the 70s or in the 80s, or I lived there. I was at an audition. Somebody was like, I just graduated today. And I was like, oh, you sweet thing.
I met a guy at an alumni event, and I'm going to have him on soon, who went to the drama school in the 80s and then has been producing reality TV and writing for reality TV his whole career. And I was like, what? So there's cool. Two of us.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Super crazy.
They're everywhere.
I love you and I miss you. Really glad that you talked to me today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Rap. It was awesome.
And you should come back. Because I'm sure there's more things for us to talk about.
There are. I'm sure. We could talk for hours.
Easy. If you were to give yourself a piece of advice when you were 14 and moving to school to study dance, what would it be? One sentence. What's your advice?
Oh, my God. Give me like 2 seconds to think about that.
No.
Oh, man.
Time's up. The window, the portal through time is closing.
We portal through time.
You have one. I can think of one from the interview that we can use if you're running out of time.
I am running out of time.
How about the mushroom line? How about it's not that
it's big not of that
deal.
Big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. Yeah. I that's significant and it's so true. And I think the world has told us that a lot. All of our little things. Not that big of a deal. There are bigger problems.
do you think she would be like, oh my God, shut up?
I'd be like, fuck off. And I would be like, good, Sarah, because I wouldn't have made it if I thought that at 14. But now, so thank you for telling me thank you for not taking that line into serious account. But now, for some perspective, yeah, it's like, it's okay.